we screw up, we'll clean up in post-production. So yeah, welcome folks to season seven. We are up to season seven of Mention and Dispatches. Now, that means it's our seventh year, of course, because we do a spring season and a fall season. So this is starting our fourth year of podcasting, which means we've been doing this for 3 years here at the Armchair Dragoons, you know, on top of all the other podcasting we did before that. And so joining me tonight for our season premiere, BB Mike. Mike, how you doing?
I am doing great. Glad to be back for season seven.
Yes. Here we are with season seven. Mike, what have you been playing all summer long?
Awesome. All summer long out. Well, go look at the playlist for My Own Worst Enemy. You'll probably see most of what I've been playing. Gosh, see, when did we record the last episode of this?
It was probably May sometime. Look, I'm sitting in front of a computer and I'm too lazy to look.
There you go. Gosh, since then, I'm trying to think. I was at some point playing through The Great Crisis of Frederick II from VUCA Simulations, which I know you just posted a five questions interview with VUCA.
Yeah, as we are recording this, our interview with Patrick Gebhardt is posted to the front page of our site. So if you want to go catch up on, you know, one of our little short five questions with interviews, Patrick is there. It looks as though it was the end of April is when we wrapped up season six with episode 13. So it was the end of April when we did that. So, you know, May, June, July, August, we've been sitting around doing nothing.
So that's about right. That's about when I was doing the playthrough of Great Crisis of Frederick II. Then I think what did I do after that? I think it was Marcus Aurelius came after that.
Yeah, I think you were trying to do Blitz at some point in there too, were you not?
That was a little bit earlier. I did do an unboxing of World in Flames, and that took about 3 days to get through that, I think.
3 days to record, or 3 days to actually wade through it all.
Yes. So yeah, there's about really not a whole lot of I've done more rule book reading, I think, than playing games. I've been trying to line up what's coming up on My Own Worst Enemy. I got a lot of stuff, receiving a lot of stuff over the last few months, a lot of new games coming in. So a lot of rules reading and that kind of thing going on too.
Yeah, so I think that your Great Crisis of Frederick II from VUCA, I think actually wrapped up after the last episode of the podcast did. But then you had Marcus Aurelius in there. I think you poked around at Stuka Joe's solo CDG game engine. And then I think you were poking around at Old School Tactical Volume 3 because it's the Pacific War and you can't help yourself.
And that's a good system. I like that one. Yeah, that was good. And speaking of the Pacific War, I just got in the War of the Pacific from Compass Games.
So let's back up a little here. Talk to us a little bit about Stuka Joe's CDG solo method for soloing you, because, you know, everybody likes to make fun of you for it on the forums as being a solo gamer. You know, every now and then you just got to play with yourself. So what is it that that you really like about Stuka Joe's solo system for CDGs, and what's something you think could maybe be improved with that engine?
So I had looked at Stuka Joe's car-driven method well before I decided to do that video, and I looked at it. I didn't really pay too much attention to it because when I play these games, I'm more of a player that likes to kind of simulate. It's more of a from a historic perspective. I'm kind of running through these games like, you know, what would happen if, say, the Japanese had done this or the Confederates had done that. And just play it that way. So I'm not really too big. I'm not really the kind of person that feels like I have to have an AI or something to play against. Even though Stuka Joe's method is not an AI, it's more of a, it kind of creates more of a fog of war effect. And the thing I like about it is Stuka Joe designed it to be a very lightweight system. So it wouldn't be something that would slow down your gameplay. And he succeeded in that tremendously, I think. So it really integrated well with Command and Colors Tricorn.
So it's more A than I, huh?
I say that again?
It's more A than I.
Yes. It's more, it makes you think, and it also, and I think I mentioned this in the video, it kind of, you know, as a solitaire player, I know what I'm going to do. It's pretty straightforward, but using his method, you know, you're kind of restricted into what you can do. You don't have access to the full hand of cards like you normally would. So you kind of have to think about what you're going to do even more. So it's an interesting system, and he's actually got another, I think it's another player's aid type card system that I have yet to look at, but I'll have to check that out too.
Okay.
So it's more of a, he's kind of a speed gameplay up, I guess. So you're not constantly looking at a rule book. You can look at a card and kind of, you know, move through the turns faster. But yeah, I mean, it worked really well with Command and Colors, and I haven't tried it with anything else yet, but it was fantastic with that game.
So in terms of the cards themselves, the package that they sell for sort of Stuka Joe's CDG Solo Helper, they're not specific to any one particular game. You mentioned they happen to work well with CNC Tricorn. That's not a GMT product. Stuka Joe's CDG engine is. So clearly Stuka Joe's that CDG helper tool obviously applies to more than just GMT games, right?
So I think so. And I'm curious because I think it's GMT is publishing his system. And I don't know when that should be out soon, I would think. But if you go back and look at Stuka Joe's, what he put up on Board Game Geek, it's kind of a generic system, but there are some system-specific rules to kind of guide you. In fact, I used the one for Command and Colors. So it's not really, when I say it's specific to Command and Colors, there's not a whole lot of changes to the system, just a few basic things. I think it was maybe half a page of stuff you kind of have to look at. So yeah, okay. I think you could use this system with any publisher's card-driven game, I think.
Okay. So it'd be interesting to, you know, throw it on and give it a whirl for Combat Commander and see what happens.
I think so. And actually, I've considered doing that one. I'm sure it would work with something like Horse and Musket. I don't know why it wouldn't.
I guess we're going to find out, huh?
Other than they don't use cards. But, you know, the thing about it is, yeah, I don't know. There's probably a way around that, too.
So I guess we're going to find out at some point. You're going to give it a try, and you're going to let us know all about it.
So, and one of the things I think I've been negligent about on My Own Worst Enemy is I haven't really, I get so into playing these games, and I kind of approached it more from a tutorial side, but I need to get more into, like I did with the showing Stuka Joe's method, I need to show more of how you can use these things to play solitaire games or play solo. And one thing I would like to do, yeah, is take his solo method and try it with something like, you know, Horse and Musket, which doesn't even use cards, and try to see if you can actually go beyond what even he intended. I've got some ideas floating around my head too for some solitaire stuff, some, you know, not a bot to play against, but some rules that would create more fog of war and more things for you to agonize over.
Because, you know, what the world needs is more agony.
Exactly. Especially when you're playing a war game.
So you said you tried it out with CNC Tricorn. Have you tried it out with any other games or just CNC Tricorn?
Yeah, just the one so far.
Okay. But hey, you know, you had a good experience with it, so I guess we're going to keep going.
Yeah, definitely. And I pre-ordered his GMT copy of that, so I'm looking forward to for cracking that open and giving it a try. Maybe when that comes in, I'll do another video on a different game and we'll see how it plays.
What do you mean maybe?
Yeah, I probably will. You're right.
What's this maybe stuff?
I mean, I did see that there was a rule sheet for Empire of the Sun, so, you know, there you go.
And, hey, that happens to be a Pacific War game.
Is that? I thought that was Napoleonics. Well, okay.
Speaking of Pacific Theater, you've already got your pledge in for Band of Brothers Old Breed, right?
Yeah, I jumped all over that.
you were what, number three, number four in the pledge?
I think I was, and that one kind of took me by surprise. I think it was Players Aid was doing was it Players Aid? Someone had mentioned it, and I saw it, and I was like, I didn't even know that was out.
You know, that is one legit criticism of kind of the way that we cover some stuff with our news. One of the things that I hate when people announce stuff, hey, we're going to do this game, you know, 6 months later, we haven't even seen it go up on pre-order yet. But you gave me an announcement 6 months ago. You got me all excited.
You know, one that I did do that with, and it's the only game I can think I've done this with in a long, long time. And it was a Horse and Musket Volume 4. And I think every morning before I logged in at work, I would go to the Hollandspiel site to see if that had released yet. And Monday I got lucky because it had. I probably was second or third to order that one.
So I'm the main person compiling Tuesday Newsday. I'm not the only person contributing to it, but I'm the main one compiling it. And I hate putting in, you know, so-and-so has announced this game is coming at some point in the next 18 months. I hate doing that, right? When the Kickstarter goes live, let me know. When it actually hits P500, let me know. When you're actually shipping copies to people, let me know. if it's just, hey, this Kickstarter is going to be coming sometime in the next 8 months. Like, I don't care, right? Give me something that we can actually act on. At that point, I'm going to report it. And so there's probably some other people that are scooping us a little bit saying, you know, oh, hey, we found out about this Kickstarter that's going to be coming up in 6 weeks. But, you know, how many times have we been told, hey, this is coming up in 6 weeks, and then 6 weeks later, it's still not there. So,
in fact, if you had done that with Band of Brothers Old Breed, yeah, you would.
Yeah. And there was somebody, it might have even been Worthington, I'm not sure. There was somebody that had put a game on Kickstarter, and it was down like 6 hours later. There was something they realized was completely gacked up about the campaign, and it didn't even go live for 6 hours before it was back down.
What was that? I saw that. And I know, because I went in to try to, it was, someone decided to do a Kickstarter on their own website, wasn't it?
No, it wasn't that one. Because somebody had announced North Cape on our website. That one's still live. The guys behind Secrets of Blackmoor, that one's still live. It was Worthington. It was the Hold the Line Excalibur Battles of King Arthur.
Oh, okay.
I think is the one that it was. Yeah, it was up, and like they had more than hit their funding goal in the first couple hours with like over 100 backers, and they canceled it the same day they launched it. And they go through the explanation about, you know, what's going on. They're going to relaunch it. They consulted with the designer. They're based on some audience feedback. They're going to tweak a couple of things with the layout and kind of the product presentation on the visual. So they pulled it down to fix things, which is good. Like, you want your best foot forward. And if they think they can make a better product, more power to them. Like, that's totally cool. But when we're reporting, hey, this is happening, we want it to actually already be happening before we're going to run off and report it. And so, you know, what that means, yeah, there's sometimes other people are going to scoop us because they're going to say, oh, hey, so-and-so has announced this game is going to be coming in, you know, before 2025. If the game isn't going to release before my son is out of college, not interested. Just not interested. Tell me what's happening. Because that's what we want from Tuesday Newsday. Like, I can see the clicks going out from our site on the back end. Like, there are people following the clicks from our news articles to go do stuff. And like, we want to give them something it can actually do, you know, whether it's pledging something or buying something or whatever it may be. So,
although that said, it is nice to know sometimes that 28th Pacific Theater War game is upcoming at some point, just so you can kind of keep an eye on it.
You know, you're right. And it would be really cool if there was an area in our forums where you could dump that kind of intel and you know, an intel dump.
Like an intel thread?
Yeah. Yeah. Something kind of like that, where you could share some new product announcements for things that haven't actually gone live yet, but people might be interested in. And, you know, well, hey, we should really totally create an intel dump area in our forum for people to do that.
I'll talk to a moderator about that. I'll see if I can find one.
Yeah. Yeah. If only it hadn't happened back on the 8th of September of 2018 when you know, he threw it in
when
there.
It was created. Yeah.
Yeah. You know, look, the third post in there is talking about All Bridges Burning from GMT, which is now out and you can go purchase. But at the time it was, you know, hey, here's some preview art for what might be the cover. It turned out to not be the art for the cover, but that's, you know, that's what we were after. And so we do have places for people to talk about stuff that they've heard about or seen about or what might be coming. But again, if we're throwing it in our news articles, we want folks to be able to do something with that other than salivate.
Yeah, so, that is true.
So, yeah, so that's what we're after. All right, so you've got your pledge in for Band of Brothers Old Breed South Pacific, because it's a Pacific Theater game, and you just can't help yourself.
And not just that, but they also had the add-on, which I also selected, where you could upgrade the components for the previous incarnations of that. So you get the nice rounded counters and that kind of thing, an updated rule book.
You're not going to clip them?
I think they're already clipped. I don't think you're allowed to double clip.
Round them, huh? There you go. You mentioned Old School Tactical Volume 3 for the Pacific, and that you had some fun with that. What is it about that one that you really dig?
I think with Old School Tactical, that it's of all the tactical games I have like that, like Lock and Load, and what's the other one?
That ASL thing?
There's many. Yes, there's a good example. So I think with old school tactical, it's, to me, it's rules light. The rule book, I love the rule book because it's numbered and it's sentences and it's easy to find stuff. And it's just, it's really fast playing. And on top of all that, it's very thematic. And there's a lot of, there's events and it's just, you know, I saw on Board Game Geek or somewhere where somebody says, it's kind of like watching one of those old World War II movies, you know, Saturday morning as a kid. It kind of is like that. It's just kind of exciting stuff to see, you know, happen. So
when you're actually playing the game, what is it that, you know, in terms of the way in which it creates that action, is it because there's variable activations? Is it because of hidden movement? Is it because of wild swings in the combat effects? What is it that really kind of creates that feeling for you?
I guess yes to all the above. I mean, it's just, you know, you have the bonsai charges that that's just can be devastating, which, you know, that's very thematic.
the charges of the miniature trees?
Yes.
Okay.
Exactly. But yeah, you know, it's, I don't know. It's just simple to jump into and start playing. And I need to spend more time with it because there's a lot of rules that I haven't brought into the game yet. There's tanks, there's caves, there's flamethrowers, satchel charges, those kinds of things I have yet to kind of add into the mix.
And I've heroic got the Marines here, waving so flags.
The Marines are doing what?
Heroic Marines waving flags from the tops of mountains.
There you go. And I think there are mountains in the game, so.
So why not? Wait. Does it include Nick Nolte screaming into a radio?
I don't think it does.
Damn. I'm out, man. I'm done. No interest.
We'll have to get you to play. I think Combat Commander Pacific has radio, so we'll have to do that instead.
So of all of those tactical level, like Platoon and below, you dig old school tactical as one that's a little more cinematic, huh?
I think it's more cinematic. If you can apply that to a war game, I would say of all the ones I played, definitely that one. Yeah.
Which one do you think is the one that's most faithful to what combat was like in the Pacific as we know it, you know, from obviously you weren't there. I'm pretty sure you weren't a participant. So, you know, of what you've seen from the different games, which one do you think is the most realistic depiction of what it was like?
It's an interesting question. I mean, how realistic are any of these things, really? I remember Rocky Mountain Navy wrote an article on just this, and I think he said Combat Commander Pacific was probably the one that fit that bill the most. And he may be right. I don't know. I'd have to go back and put some thought into that. And sure, like I said, I don't really have all the games yet. I still have to get the Old Breed in and try that one and
yeah,
see how that plays.
Be honest with us. How much of the Advanced Squad Leader Pacific Theater games have you actually played or scenarios?
I only have the starter kit for that, and I have not played it. And I know we just did a focus on Squad Leader, and that would have been a good time to jump in on that, but I didn't. And I'm not sure how rules intensive that starter kit is, you know? I don't know.
Did we just program the next 6 weeks of My Own Worst Enemy?
I hope not. That would be an awful long time. And like I said, I've got a backlog of things. Because not only did I get the War of the Pacific, I also, at the same time, ordered the reprint of the War Europe. So I have that.
So you've got both Europe and Pacific for those.
I do. I have this dream of one day playing the entire World War II with one of these game systems from beginning to end. And I've got several to choose from now. So I've got the two we just mentioned. I've got World in Flames, which would probably be talking years to complete rather than weeks or months on that one. I've got Absolute Victory, which is another. And these things, I don't know if you've seen the maps in Absolute Victory. It's, again, it's like, I think it's three big maps that you've got to have space for, right? So that's my biggest issue. And when I did the unboxing of the War of the Pacific, I was kind of shocked at just how big those maps were. And there are two in there, and they're huge. So to where would you put four maps that size? I don't know. I'd have to get another house.
Table?
I would have to have a dedicated room.
At Origins?
I don't think there'd be enough time, though. You're only there for, what, 3 days?
Well, this year it is going to be curtailed. Most years, like, you could get in there and start setting up Wednesday morning.
You could. Of course, I would probably lose some Japanese infantry if I tried in Origins.
It'd reappear in a completely different box.
if ever. Probably with some Roman governors, if I'm not mistaken.
At some point, we're going to need to make like an omnibus index page on our site, all of the in-jokes that we continue to reference in our in our various podcasts. What was the game that you were running that year at Origins when the Japanese infantry went AWOL?
That
unconditional victory.
That was what did you say?
I said unconditional victory because it sounded right in my head, but it doesn't sound right as I'm saying it.
No, it was a cataclysm, I think.
Cataclysm.
See, there's another World War II all-encompassing, you know, couple of maps worth of this. Yeah. So like I said, I've got to pick a system, and maybe I'll have to do a poll on the site or something when I get ready to do it, see what people, of course, not put World in Flames in there, but see what people say.
Well, but explaining the gag, so Cataclysm, Mike was setting up Cataclysm. Cracked shrink on the box to set up Cataclysm to have it ready for his first event and to make sure, you know, we had everything in place. Everything was pushing around properly. Solid understanding of the rules to had been over them before, but making sure that you knew where to flip quickly to reference what you needed as you went through. And then when Mike was setting up the initial scenario, there were two Japanese infantry counters that we just could not find. And to this day, they're probably in the third subfloor of the Columbus Convention Center, and it's been years since we had Cataclysm on the table there, and nobody could find these things. They were socially distancing before it was cool. And I think that was the year that we had Grant Alexander from Players Aid show up at Origins and hang out with us. And we had some AWOL Japanese infantry. They're hiding in caves in the Philippines and just don't want to be found.
Yeah, they did. Grant and Alexander showed up that night to play, and if I see him again, I'll have to apologize in person, because it was one of those things where we tried playing Cataclysm, and if you've ever played it, the first part of that game is the diplomacy part, and it's just, it can be a slog. And of course, we didn't have the rules down completely, and I think it just kind of ground to a halt after a couple of hours. And
well, not just that. If I recall, everybody around the table was just kibitzing as much as they were trying to play.
Yeah,
a lot of the diplomacy sort of devolved into, well, you know, I was playing this completely unrelated game about 6 weeks ago, and it reminded me of this completely other unrelated game that I was playing 2 years ago. And so there was a lot of just general chit chat and visiting that had absolutely nothing to do with the game that kind of dragged into it a bit as well.
Which is great, because that's why you're at Origins, right? So you can
see these
people and talk about all these cool things.
Yeah, it is absolutely half game convention, half family reunion.
So, but anyway, yeah, those two Japanese infantry counters disappeared. Don't know what happened to them. And then the next year, I was running Time of Crisis, right?
Yes.
And we had two copies of that going. And I remember I ended up losing, was it all the governors for one of the powers? I can't remember. But I remember I went back and looked, because I had taken pictures of the setup before we started playing, and they were in the picture.
Yeah. No, they were there, and then they weren't.
And the only common thread is I set up both of these games, so I don't know. And it's not like I'm hoarding counters from pieces and parts from different games.
Yeah, and the ridiculous thing about it is, like, I could see if we had a minis game on the table and some, you know, some schmuck walked by and, like, swiped a couple of really cool-looking minis because he or she wanted to use them in their own role-playing game somewhere else. Like, that I would kind of get. These are flipping flat cardboard counters that are of completely no value to you outside of the game for which they are intended. Like, what are you doing with those?
And see, the thing about that is, for Time of Crisis, I did have some cool looking, well, they weren't cool looking, but I did have some pretty decent minis on the table with those things. So
it was those big ass 54 millimeter Roman generals that you had floating around on the table.
Yeah.
Which they looked cool as hell. Total props for that. They really did look good.
Well, again, you're at Origins. If you're going to GM these things, you gotta have a nice table, right? I'm kind of really sad I'm going to miss it this year.
Dude, you had your chance. As Mike has mentioned, Origins, as we are recording this, has not happened yet, which is weird because it's supposed to happen like around Father's Day weekend in June. But because of the plague, both Origins and Gen Con push back, trying to wait for things to settle down. The irony, of course, is that with the upturn in COVID cases, it would have been safer to hold them back in the summer on their original weekends than probably perhaps when they
weren't. That's funny. It would have been.
So Gen Con is actually happening like next weekend as we're, you know, by the time this gets released, it will have already happened. Origins is coming up at the end of the month. It's the first weekend in October. So the weekend when September turns to October. And And we're going to have the Dragoons. We're going to be there. We're going to be on a limited crew. We've only got like four GMs because that's really all we could get. And part of that is the plague. Part of that is the time of year, you know, when kids are in school and folks are back to regular work schedules and, you know, other things are happening in people's lives. Even if it weren't for the plague, holding this thing in October makes it tough for folks to get away and come be a part of that. So we have a very limited menu of options for the Dragoons this year compared to what we normally do. There's no CPXs, no Kriegspiels, none of those big things. We will have the team coin games going there, but that's about the only big four-hour event like that. We are going to have a couple of epic Commands and Colors games that are bigger, but not necessarily longer, because you're not going to get a four-hour game out of that necessarily. You know, the important thing is we're still going to be there. The Dragoons will still be present. There will still be wargaming at Origins. It just won't be as grandiose as we normally do. To that end, there's some mixed feelings about it. It's a little bittersweet. It would be cool to have the whole crew back together because, as we mentioned, it's sort of equal parts family reunion and game convention. But we're going to do the best we can with the hand we've been dealt, and we're going to get as many games played as we can. One thing that is not in the program, because we didn't know we were going to be able to pull this off, but we will have it in the evenings for folks to poke around at. We'll all kind of learn some together. I have a copy of the U.S. Marine Corps, the professional game, Fleet Marine Force, the one that Sebastian Bay designed, that he's been hand assembling the copies of these things to ship out to units all around the world. And you know, folks like the Naval War College and the Marine Corps University and whatever. He shipped us one to be able to use at Origins. I don't get to keep it. I got to send it back to him after Origins. But I've got a full kit of Fleet Marine Force with the Luzon map from the Philippines, and we're going to throw it on the table and see what happens. And it's going to be a little different because this isn't something that's designed for pure entertainment value. There's a bunch of stuff in here that really only matters to the professionals, but we're going to give it a try and we're going to see. So if you want to see something really different, and look, it's not one of the CPXs, it's not one of the Kriegspiels, but it's still a chance to get under the hood with one of the professional games out there. Mo's Game Table, I think Mo highlighted Fleet Marine Force on an episode or two of his show, either playing it or talking with Sebastian about it. I don't remember for sure. Again, I'm sitting in front of a computer and I'm too lazy to look it up. But, you know, Mike, it's Pacific Theater. It's just modern day. It's not World War II. So I'm sure you won't care about it. But we're gonna have something a little different on the table. You know, we've got some tank on tank, we've got some tank duel, we've got some dogfighting, we've got Second World War at sea. So we've got legit, no kidding, no bullshit kind of war games floating around out there. It's just not going to be the 80 hours of wargaming that we normally pull together over a 5-day convention, because we've only got really 2.5 days to work with. Barely 3 full days to work with. And we've only got a crew of like 4 or 5 of us that are going to be there. Come see us at Origins. Come have fun with it. And Mike, you're going to be there next year though, right? 2022.
Back in the saddle, I suppose. I hope, but I don't know. You know, that's a whole year away. Well, no, it's less than a year if it's in June, right?
Yeah. It's less than a year at this point. You going to be retired by then?
Very close, but not quite.
Not quite. Okay. So you and Vance won't be fully hanging out as the retired guys making fun of the rest of us.
That's right. Not quite there yet. But who knows? Maybe some of these other conventions we can start spreading out to and making an appearance at.
We have threatened to show up at WashingCon in the spring. Don't know if that'll happen or not. One of these days, you're actually going to make the drive down here, and we're going to go do Mace out in Charlotte. We keep talking about Mace, and we haven't made it to Mace yet. One of these deals
that came very close to happening this year. Very close. I think that's going to happen. I really do.
Yeah, it better, because Jeff's probably getting sick of me telling him we're going to be there and then backing out on him. We do. MLK weekend will be our next digital convention. So as we're looking quite a ways ahead, we will have our next digital convention in January. And as we are recording this, I just got off the phone, you know, the virtual phone. I just got off the line with the guys from the International Kriegspiel Society, and we are looking at a big co-branded Kriegspiel-focused event sometime after the next ACDC in January. Sometime after that, we are going to have a big Dragoons and IKS-branded event, more than likely. Like, we as the Dragoons internally still need to confirm that, yes, this is what we want to do, and here's how the timing looks, et cetera, et cetera. But I think that that's something that, you know, I think we all would like to get involved with. If for no other reason, maybe we get to play in some of these things for a change. Mike, you're going to finally make it to WBC some year, aren't you?
Well, like I said, once retirement hits, yeah.
Even with retirement being a little further in the future than you would probably like, you'll still make it to WBC before I will. Plague or no plague, WBC always seems to land on some weekend when I just cannot make it for whatever reason. Yeah. David Heath texted me a picture the other day of me at an Origins from 2008, 2009, somewhere around there, a long damn time ago. And I messaged him back and I was like, any idea what year this is? And he sent one back. He's like, long, long ago. That's the best we could identify. It was a while ago for darn sure.
David Heath. So yeah, I just got something from Lock and Load Publishing about a week ago.
Uh-oh. What showed up?
They just dropped, it's called The Day Is Ours, The Battle for Princeton, 1777. So look for that one coming up at some point.
Well, you know, as we are recording this, Unboxing Day is about a week away.
Oh, that there's plenty to choose from for me when it comes to that. So I should be good to the end of the year.
Well, then, salivating a little bit over here. That means that I don't have to try and unbox too many things my darn self. That means I got you guys to do it all for me, which is how this is supposed to work. We're supposed to be showing.
You might as well, though. The more the merrier.
Yeah. I've had to slow down slightly on some of my game purchasing. In case I hadn't already mentioned it, my son started college a couple of weeks ago. So, yeah, there went my game buying fund.
But he's still buying games, right?
Well, no. So he is there on a partial esports scholarship. So they're paying for the games for him. I'm paying for him to be there for them to pay for the games for him. But so no, he's not buying as many. He's also, again, esports, right? Primarily a digital gamer. He hangs out with us at Origins. He enjoys playing some tabletop stuff, but he's a kid, right? I mean, that's the thing. They've got joysticks in their hands. That's what they're after. He's there primarily as a FIFA guy, but they're looking at adding a Destiny team for their esports. And I think in part because he's there to help lead that, he's a fairly ranked Destiny player, you know, among the global community of Destiny guys. There's a dude on Twitter. It's Raging Owlbear is the guy's Twitter handle. Nice dude. Met him at Origins, interacted with him a bunch on social media over the years. He does a regular Monday or Tuesday night recurring video live stream that is the Dad Sucks at Video Games live stream. So he sits down and plays with his son and gets his butt kicked pretty regularly. But they do a live Twitch stream every week. That's the Dad Sucks at Video Games live stream. He has fun with it. Why not?
Right. Well, if you grew up at a certain time, like I did, if you're talking about playing things like on Xbox and PlayStation, I can relate to that because I never graduated beyond the old Nintendo, you know, up, down, left, right, A, B controllers. And I look at the new ones now and it's just like, I can't do that. It's way
You made it further than I did, man. I've maxed out at the Atari 2600. And so like those Atari flashback consoles, you know, when those hit Target around Christmas time, I'll grab one of those with the 180 games built in, but it's still the one button, one joystick kind of thing. That's as complicated as I want to get.
And then you'll fire that up and you'll wonder how you sat in front of that thing all day long as a kid.
Yeah. No kidding. Well, on rainy days. Yeah. We never went through the Nintendo phase of things. We got an Xbox when my son was old enough to play it. One of the offices I used to work at long, long ago had a couple of Xboxes in the conference rooms plugged into the big screen monitors. And so we would get some video gaming going over lunches. About once a month, we'd hang out after hours and have like a game night in there. I learned to play some Halo. I think it was Halo 3 that we were using. I was essentially the target goalie. In the 2.5 years I was at the company, I think I won one Halo match the entire time. It was fun.
Yeah. See, if I did anything like that, it'd have to be on the PC now. I can't do the controllers.
Yeah, that was the biggest thing for me is just, you know, too many buttons on the controllers for me. Says the guy with, you know, a full extended keyboard in front of him on the table.
As Armchair Dragoons continue the 7th season of Mentioned in Dispatches, we need to take a moment to thank those Patreon supporters who pledged at the regimental patron level. So a special thank you to Patrick Mullen, Hethwill Wargames, Steelgrave, Mike Quigley, Staggerwing, Robert, Joseph Knoll, Treb Curry, Kevin Bertram, and Patrick Garrity for their support of Armchair Dragoons and helping us bring you the best wargaming content on the web. You can join our Patreon supporters at patreon.com/armchairdragoons.
Mike, what's we talked some about some of the stuff you've played over the summer. Was there something you wanted to play that you just didn't quite get to?
I've got several space 4X type board games that I want to try. And I wanted to get at least one of those to the table over the summer and start it. But I'm faced with the same problem that, you know, if I start something like, say, Stellar Conquest, that's going to go on for a while. And so what I'm trying to do now is maybe set up an alternate space for the longer term sessions so I can have those either off in a corner somewhere and kind of just get to them as I can, or maybe convert something like that over to Tabletop Simulator so I can have a virtual setup.
So sounds like you need an extra house out in the country.
Yeah, well, just an extra room somewhere would be fine. A basement.
Yeah. You know, you mentioned virtualizing these things. I don't know how many folks realize it necessarily, but when you are shooting My Own Worst Enemy, you're not capturing a digital game. That's a camera suspended over an actual physical table where you're playing, right?
Yeah, I prefer to do the actual physical stuff. I kind of prefer that. I've done a couple in Tabletop Simulator. It's easier to do in Tabletop Simulator because, like I said, you don't have to worry about, you know, setting up and cats knocking things over and that sort of thing. But yeah, what I do on My Own Worst Enemy is all overhead shots of a board game table.
Yeah, there's no atomic cat in Tabletop Simulator.
No, there's not.
Somebody should totally make one as a mod that you could, you know, have the virtual cat wander around the Tabletop Simulator table. That would be kind of hilarious.
So, and the problem with Tabletop Simulator is, of course, a lot of these war games aren't in there. And Don't Tread on Me was the one I actually had to create from scratch. So I'm getting pretty good at putting things into Tabletop Simulator, but it can be time consuming.
Speaking of things going into Tabletop Simulator, have you seen the new Armchair Dragoons Triple Letter Campaigns rule set that is being developed in our forums?
I have. I haven't seen anything on Tabletop Simulator.
Well, so they're working on the mod for it now. OJ's dad is working with Patrick Mullen, who's Navarone Gun on the forum. Pretty much anywhere you're going to find him online, he's Navarone Gun. He's the designer behind the forthcoming Legion War game, A Hot Dry Season, which is a Vietnam War game. Patrick is U.S. military veteran who's done some war game design. And he's putting together this triple letter campaigns set of minis rules designed to be used in Tabletop Simulator, but you can put them on a regular tabletop also. OJ's dad is helping him with some of the Tabletop Simulator mod creation. So it's scaled at platoon level. So one stand of figures running around out there is representing an entire platoon. So you might see four riflemen out there on the stand, but that's supposed to represent a whole platoon of dudes. And Patrick kind of bashed these rules together in, I don't know, a week, maybe week and a half. He was sending me the drafts as he was working on them. And after the third or fourth time that I had only just opened a draft that he had sent a modified draft to me that I just gave up and said, look, let me know when you're done for the night and I'll take a look at them. But we're going into alpha testing soon. So as folks are listening to this, if you would like to help alpha test a set of World War II minis rules, take a look in our forums where we've got the triple letter campaigns area set up. The reason that it's got the name that it does, that TLC name, is Patrick's name for the different campaigns all have three letters. So the first one is the Race to Tunis, RTT. And so that's the first one that he's doing. But the subsequent campaigns that he has in mind are all ones that come down to three-letter acronyms, which is where the triple-letter campaigns came from. And so when you talk about taking games and converting stuff into what you can do in TTS, in this case, we're kind of building from scratch because it's a minis thing. So we're having to model the figures or, you know, use somebody else's modeled figures that we're going to run with. And they're putting it together right now for the goal is alpha testing over about the next month. So, you know, 3 weeks or so by the time people are hearing this, and hoping to start the campaign later this year, for real, where it's going to be a couple of high level commanders, a bunch of dudes down at the battalion and brigade level that they'll fight out the they'll fight the actual battles, and those results will aggregate back up to the kind of division level commanders or core level commanders to figure out what their next actions are, their next allocations, moving big units around on the map. And wherever the big units clash on the big map, that's where we'll zoom in and actually fight the battles. So it'll be interesting to see how it all pans out.
That will be interesting. Sounds interesting.
It's not something we had intended to do necessarily, but we are starting to drift into actually pushing some rule sets out through the Armchair Dragoons with sort of an unofficial Armchair Dragoons imprint on them. I've got a set of naval rules that somebody else had put together that I need to finish the PDF layouts on. We've got a couple of rule sets that are in a closed area in our forums that a couple of us are working on. Tolstoy and I are working on one that's a little more doctrine and planning and organization focused. I'm curious to see what that's actually going to look like when we get to the point where we're ready to sort of push some counters around on a map and see what happens. And you know, Mike, you keep threatening to help me out with the any minis, going back to that one and figure out that skirmish minis game and see what we can do with it. So we may end up having a handful of different rule sets that sort of have the Armchair Dragoons logo on them. We're not trying to become a game publisher. We're just sort of pushing out some ideas that people can play with and see what happens.
And see, those are things you could test in Tabletop Simulator. Now, I haven't really got into making 3D miniatures. That's not beyond my capabilities. I've done stuff like that in the past using Blender, but it's that would have to start almost completely over to do something like that.
Yeah,
and I think counters and maps and boards and those kinds of things I can do.
Mm-hmm. The figures that the guys are using for the triple letter campaigns, I don't think are scratch built. I think they found some in the Steam Workshop somewhere and are repurposing them with some slight modifications. I don't know that for certain. Pop in the forums and ask, folks, if you're that curious. See what you get. So Mike, I wanted to ask you, you know, we mentioned that the Dragoons may be drifting into sort of releasing some of our own branded games here. We've got a variety of different live games that we're playing. We talked some about the different conventions at which the Dragoons might land and be a part of, and some of the co-branded things that we've worked on. You know, we co-sponsored Connections Online back in April. We've now had three different virtual conventions that we've run ourselves on top of our Origins events. We're 3 years into the existence of the Armchair Dragoons as a regiment. What do you think? What have we done that's been pretty cool? What have we done that just outright sucked? What are some things we need to keep doing? What are some things we can try and improve on?
I think I mentioned it before, but my favorite thing so far has been the Tuesday Newsdays. I love those. I'm pretty good at keeping up with what's going on, but there's always something new in there that I just didn't know about. So I always look forward to seeing that. I think that's probably my favorite thing so far.
Guys, I keep telling these dudes it just sounds like they're kissing up by telling me that that's their favorite thing. But, you know.
And we wouldn't, because we just wouldn't do that. And you know that. So.
Yes, I definitely know that. For folks that aren't super familiar with Tuesday Newsday, like, what got released, what got put up for pre-order, what's on sale, what's some of the news, here's what the Dragoons had for the past week, here's something going on in the professional wargaming world. So we just try and do a quick whip around what's out there. So
yeah, in one spot, easy access, you know, you go right to that page and see pretty much, you know, what's happening.
All right, so outside of Tuesday Newsday and sucking up to the host, right, you know, what are some other things that we've done well with the Dragoons, and what are some places where we still need some improvement?
I think, well, you know, the other thing is the unboxing day. I think that's kind of cool. I think everybody likes to see those, the unboxing videos. And to have them just, all day long, that's kind of cool. And then the other thing is, you know, new stuff like the new focus on we have in the forums where we pick a game or a game series and just talk about it for a month. And I'm hoping that takes off, because I think that's a really neat idea. I'd like to see a lot more participation in that. You know, people that have played, you know, so I think we're doing, is it Command and Colors is the one we're currently doing?
We're doing C&C right now, but I don't remember if Bob just sort of treated it as an omnibus of all things C&C, or if angling towards a specific, like, you know, let's just talk about
Napoleon. He's kind of narrowed it down to the Napoleonics and maybe the Tricorn sets, I think. I mean, you can talk about any of them, I'm sure, but
the Age of Gunpowder, basically.
Yeah, I think that was his intent.
Yeah.
You know, it's just that, you know, you pick a series like that and just you can people that are new to it is a great time, I think, to get in and learn how to play the game or to ask questions or to just, you know, here's what I've learned or here's some player's aids I created, that kind of thing. So I'm kind of hoping that takes off. I think that's kind of neat.
Yeah. Well, it's always a tough balancing act between the specialists who know everything about the game inside out, forwards, backwards, side to side and upside down versus the generalists who have played that game a couple of times alongside, you know, a lot of other games that they've played as well. How do you strike that right balance between them? You know, you're right. It's a great opportunity for more casual players to get some info out of the more dedicated players and, you know, get some ideas and some thoughts and what can people do with them. I think that's definitely something that folks could do more of with that focus on series. What needs work? What do we still need to work on and improve on and do a little better with?
The thing that I would like to see probably improved on, and you're probably already aware of this, you probably know the answer even before I say it, is I think we have the articles that we publish some really good stuff. And I think we need to do more of that. I think, if we had more articles like Rocky Mountain Navy did, you know, he's a great writer and those are interesting reads. I would love to see more of that kind of stuff. The five questions we have with designers, I mean, those are great. You know, maybe if we can get some more of those out there, I think that would be good.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not going to argue with people sending more content to us. I would love to. We've got a stable of fairly talented writers, and we're always looking to expand it. The challenge you run into is that when you've got a bunch of volunteer writers, there's only so fast you're going to get stuff out of them for the level of quality that we're looking for. I've got a couple of different things right now that folks have submitted that I'm going back and forth with them about to try and make them as good as we can. You know, we're always looking for more, so happy to have some writers. You didn't mention it. You've probably seen it in the forums in there. One of the pieces that Rocky wrote for us was actually nominated for a Charlie Award for Best Analysis Article.
Yeah, I did see that. Yeah, I
think which that was awesome. Pretty neat. It was the one that he wrote about Fifth Core. And what's kind of cool about what he wrote for Fifth Core was that he was really digging into not just what is the game trying to do, but how is the game reflective of U.S. doctrine at that time? And that's kind of a neat approach to take to the game because the game was released right before the Army switched from the active defense doctrine to the air land battle doctrine. And so it goes back and looks at the active defense doctrine that was contemporary to the time the game was designed, not the airland battle doctrine, which was more contemporary to when many people played the game. But yeah, I got nominated for Charlie, which is, look, we pretty well ripped the Charlies last year on the podcast episode with me and Cyrano and Aardwolf, and quite frankly, deservedly so in a couple of places. And it's one of the inspirations behind the upcoming Armchair Dragoons awards of our own that we're working on now. It's always cool when one of your guys gets nominated for a big award like that. That's kind of neat. And
yeah,
you know, you're right. Look, Stigler wrote a great tactical analysis operational analysis actually of that Fifth Corps series of how can you win as the Warsaw Pact? Like what are the things you need to do to be able to win as the Eastern commander in a Cold War goes hot kind of game. Really a lot of what he wrote comes back to don't think like a Westerner, which sort of a no duh kind of statement, but a lot of people still screw that up when they're playing those games. They're trying to use the Russians and fight with Western style tactics. And that's not what you can do, or that's not what you should be doing. That was his point in that article. We've had a couple of other pretty good analytical articles over the years and would love to see more. You're right. Guys, if you want to come write for us, we'd be happy to have you. We've got, you know, willing editors that are willing to help you whip an article into shape for us. And let's see where we go for that. Mike, feel free to write something any day now.
Yeah, like I said, starting maybe the end of next year, I should have a lot more free time on my hands to do that.
Some of the stuff that's happened with the Dragoons over the past 3 years was unplanned evolution. You know, we didn't intend to become the kind of the kings of streaming wargaming the way we have. Part of that was Cyrano just sort of poking around with, hey, I wonder if this will work. And suddenly it was, hey, this works. And then it became, hey, I really enjoy doing this, to where he's the grognard of the year for 2020 with the amount of streaming that he's done and being able to help other folks get into distributed wargaming, which has been a big deal during the plague, where we've been able to keep a lot of folks gaming and probably even increase the amount of gaming that they've been doing with the use of virtualization, whether it's Tabletop Simulator, whether it's Vassal, whatever it is, you know, a multiplayer engine like the some of the Matrix stuff that they've done. We've had a lot of really cool games that we've been able to, you know, stream. We've got a whole sub forum section set up for people that want to sign up and join some of these big games. I mean, that Leipzig game went what, like, I think by the time they were done playing, it actually went more hours than the real battle. And had 8 or 9 dudes in it that committed 3 months of their, you know, Saturday nights to playing this thing. That was kind of cool.
See, that's the amazing part, that you get some the same consistent, mostly consistent group to come back and do it again and again and again. It's a testament to just how fun that can be and just the dedication of those players. Yeah.
And when we launched the Dragoons, there were some things that we had said we definitely wanted to do. There were some things that we said we definitely did not want to do. Nowhere in our original launch plan was there a thought of, hey, we want to do a whole lot of distributed wargaming and stream as much of it as we can for people to be able to watch along with us. That was never on the table. It's evolved that way to where we may have streams going 2 and 3 and 4 nights a week, and it's not all just Jim. We've got other folks starting to step in and stream some stuff as well. We've got people attending and partnering up with, you know, International Kriegsspiel Society for some of their really big events. We've got, you know, the Dragoons had entered a team in Georgetown University Wargaming Society, and I can't remember who the other agency was that was a part of it. Games on Tables, maybe, or History on the Table, had the Sail and Shot tournament that they put together for Age of Sail. Head-to-head wargaming, distributed wargaming. Dude, we won that thing. Like, seriously.
I didn't see that coming, yeah.
We won a naval wargame tournament. Go figure. Look, it was all Tolstoy and Maguire, and we got lucky. Like, we got Peter Perla randomly assigned to us as an independent player. Nobody's ever going to complain about getting Peter Perla assigned to your team. You know, Tolstoy took the lead on that, and he and Maguire pulled this thing together so that, you know, Perla had a team that he was able to join for us. And they went out and they won the damn tournament. That's kind of cool. Yeah. Certainly not what we were expecting. So it's really neat the way some of these things have evolved that were completely unplanned with what we'd originally, you know, intended to do. We always knew, you know, we enjoyed podcasting. We wanted to keep podcasting going with the Dragoons. We enjoyed a lot of the forum discussion. We wanted to keep some of that stuff going. We had no idea that things were going to get as active through other social media channels like Discord or Twitter or whatever. We had no idea we were going to end up doing the amount of live content we're doing with YouTube. That there was no way that was ever planned. It's kind of cool how it's happened, though.
That's the virtual convention. It's just amazing how that's, you know, you tried it and it was like, how's this going to work out? But I think it's really popular. I think it's just going to continue to grow.
Anybody that thinks we had any idea what we were doing the first time is completely fooling themselves.
Yeah. I can attest to the fact, because I was on some of those early conversations, no one had any clue as to how to even do that.
We had no idea what we were doing, but more, you know, not necessarily more importantly, equally importantly, nobody else had a clue what we were doing, so it's not like they could tell us we were doing it wrong. Nobody knew what right was supposed to look like. That's always helpful when nobody else knows what you're supposed to be doing, so they can't call you on it.
There you go. They worked good. I think it's just going to get better. And, you know, even if the plague disappears entirely, I think you're still going to continue this because it's just kind of a neat thing to do.
Yeah, I think, and we've talked about this some, you know, during the shows as a part of the conventions themselves. We are kind of committing to maintaining at least one virtual convention per year. And MLK weekend looks like a good weekend to shoot for, just based on how other things are happening on the calendar throughout the year. That looks like a good weekend for us to try and occupy as our regular digital convention weekend. That's what we're going to shoot for this coming year. We'll see what happens in 2023 beyond that. We would like to shift from virtual into the real world and maybe eventually have like a Dragoon Con of some sort.
That would be neat.
In real life. We're not in a rush to make that happen. If we'd been in a rush to make it happen, it would have happened 5 years ago. but we want to do it. We want to do it well. I don't want to say we're going to do it right, because there's no real right way to do it. But we want to do it well. So at some point we'll have a real world one. Besides,
well, if we can without losing any counters, we've already won, right?
Yes. No kidding. Audience, definitely look, chime in, whether it's, you know, commenting on this podcast or jumping into our forums and, you know, talk to us. What are some things that you think we've done well? What are some things that you think we've sucked at, you know, and be honest, tell us what you like, what you don't like. We definitely want to hear, don't just tell us what you like. I mean, it's nice to hear, but that doesn't really give us anything that we can act on. Tell us some of the things that we can improve on, some of the things we should be doing differently, because that helps us better calibrate to meet your expectations. And that's something we want to be able to do. You know, something that's been a bit of a pet project of mine that I've been pushing on some, and, you know, we make it a point to include in Tuesday Newsday. It really came to the front with our co-sponsorship of Connections Online. I definitely wanted us to be much more tied into the professional wargaming community than many of the other hobby sites are. And to be able to give those professionals and practitioners an easy on-ramp into the hobby wargaming community, to be able to tap the hobby community for ideas, for resources, for inspiration in their professional wargaming world, but also to allow the hobbyists to get a look at how the professionals do things and what kinds of things matter to them, and what are some ways we can enhance our hobby gaming by pulling in some of those professional practitioner ideas. I'm still not sure we're doing it well, but we're still trying, and we'll see how far we get with that. It's definitely something I want to continue to be involved with. I'm still trying to push that rock up the hill a little more. I'm hoping the rest of y'all kind of follow along a little more than has happened so far. But again, you guys talk back to me. If you think that's a complete waste of time, let me know. I'm not promising I'm going to stop doing it, but at least, you know, I'll know why nobody's following. You know, it's those kinds of things that we're interested in. Help us calibrate to better meet expectations. Like, yeah, that's
feedback
that's
is important. That's one of the things I'm always asking for on the videos on My Worst Enemies. Like, leave comments. Let me know what's right, what's wrong. If you don't get any feedback, we don't know what to do, how to change.
Definitely need some of that. With all of that, we're gonna call it a night here. This is a slightly shorter podcast. There's only the two of us tonight,
and we promise this is one of the things we'll change. The podcast will improve. It won't be this bad all the time.
You know, don't go making promises we're not necessarily sure we can keep. But one of the other things, you know, in terms of those incremental improvements, we are changing the way in which we record the podcast. And so tonight was a bit of an experiment in seeing how this is going to come together with the new back-end technology that we're working on. It is entirely possible that this thing does not record properly, or that the audio is complete crap. And so I'm talking to a recording that will never see the light of day. I hope that's
which may not be a bad thing, because this was a totally unplanned and spur of the moment podcast.
Oh, no. Look, this thing has been planned. It's been on the calendar for like 6 weeks. We just ignored it until today.
So we didn't do our homework is what you're saying.
Exactly. Right. We were exactly like the undergrads that I used to hate when I was teaching. We knew it was coming 6 weeks ago and we just blew it off until today. And we're like, oh, crap, we need to pull this together. And here we are. We've always said that our shtick is not to be overly rehearsed and overly prescriptive about the podcast. We want it to be very much a couple of dudes sitting around a bar talking war games, and somebody just puts on a tape recorder, and here we are.
And hope it records. That's exactly where we are.
Pretty much, yeah. Hey, season 7 has now kicked off. This is the first of what will be at least a dozen or so episodes of season 7. What's coming up this season? Amabel from Hollenspiel is supposed to stop by and pay us a visit. So we're going to have Amabel come see us. We're going to have some reports from Origin. So I would suspect Aardwolf at a minimum is going to make an appearance, but we'll have a couple other folks. We may actually record a podcast while we are at Origins and see what comes of that. We've got, what else do we have, Mike? Somewhere in here, we're going to do the Compass catalog again, because it comes out every fall. And then Compass gets mad at us for whatever we did or didn't say on the podcast. We're totally doing that again.
I'm so looking forward to getting that Compass catalog.
Yeah. We've got the designer from the Robotech Reconstruction game which was inspired by GMT's coin system, going to stop by and going to join us for a podcast episode later this season. So we're going to have that. Like I said, the folks from IKS will probably stop by. I would suspect at some point we're going to have a chat with the guys out at Fort Leavenworth again, because we do all the time. Kevin from Fort Circle Games has threatened to come join us at some point. That one may not happen until the spring, only because they've got a major product launch that they're trying to get ready for, and time may be in short supply for him this season. So, yeah, we've got some cool stuff coming, and hope that you guys enjoy, and come back next week for another episode. So, good night, everybody.